Vidyate.
Vidyate.
Exist.
Exist.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Purport. A person who is fully Krishna conscious and is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed. An effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. His duty thus becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord, and therefore he no longer has any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. Such a Krishna-conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. Atma Rati, Atma Triptas, Atman Eva Cha Santushta. Rati is attraction for pleasure. We have different attractions, although some of them are very common. Most people are attracted to the opposite sex. Most people are attracted to good food, although we may have different ideas of what good food is. Most people have other kinds of favored sense gratification. This is what we usually call rati. But atma rati, one who is attracted to pleasure to be found on the inside, not on the outside. Atma triptas. It's one thing to be attracted, to be agitated for enjoyment. It's another thing to be satisfied. Tripta. In external gratification, there is never any real satisfaction. There is constant further and further agitation. The more you try to enjoy, the more agitated and unsatisfied you become. But it's possible when you redirect your source of your looking for enjoyment to the inside, it's possible to become satisfied. Santushta. That means experiencing not only your itch is going away because you scratched it, but you're feeling positive pleasure, not the, just the pleasure of scratching an itch, but a positive pleasure, santosha. That's an adverb in Kannada. Yeah. Means happy or what does it mean? In Kannada, santosha? Yeah. Happiness, it's here. About what it means in Sanskrit. This can be understood impersonally, but that's just a theory. There isn't much real pleasure to be found by the impersonalists. This Brahmananda is a fiction. Almost like the way the pleasure of sex is a fiction. There isn't really much there. Some itching and some scratching of the itch. And similarly, in Brahmananda, it's all expectation and not much substance. If you actually strip everything off the Supreme Truth and leave nothing, no form and no qualities, there's not anything left to enjoy. If you merge your existence into the existence of the Supreme, there cannot be any basis for any real enjoyment, because real enjoyment must be reciprocal. Just as electricity must flow from a positive to a negative side, electrons don't move unless there's a difference of potential. Similarly, unless there's a difference between the Vishaya and the Ashraya, there is no rasa. There is no real spiritual pleasure. So we can dismiss the impersonal interpretation of this, because there is no real inner satisfaction, not much, impersonally. This really means actual connection with the absolute truth. What are you going to find inside? You know, blood and guts? I mean, if you're looking with material eyes, that's, you look inside, that's all you find, a bag of filthy things. That's going to give you pleasure? Better stay outside if that's all you can see. So what else can we find inside? The Upanishads tell us we should look in the subtle place. Don't look in your stomach, or if you're looking in the heart, don't look in this muscle, you know, in the ventricles and aorta and the fat, you know, deposits around your heart. You're not going to find anything nice there. Just more meat and blood. So you have to look for that subtle place in the heart. This is called Dahara Vidya, the meditation on the subtle place in the heart. There's a subtle sky in that heart. In that sky, there's a special person who lives there. You have to find him. You have to get into this subtle place. You have to discover the vast, the small place. You know, the heart, the region of the heart that we're talking about is about the size of your thumb. Even the physical heart is about the size of your fist. It's not that big. You know, people think the heart is like that. It's not. It's not a 5-gallon container. It's a, you know, what is that? 150 milliliters. I don't know how much blood the heart actually holds, but not much. It's like a fist size. And in there you have this much. This is how big that little area is. The region of the heart on the subtle plane. And there you may find the super soul. And you're there, you, the spirit soul, reside there too. Two little birds sitting on the tree. This we should discover. This subtle soul within the heart. And the supreme soul, also in the same place. That's where you find happiness. The two birds, who are natural, eternal friends, when they rediscover one another, then one can actually feel satisfied. One can enjoy positive happiness. On the basis of satisfaction, one can live peacefully in this world. One can function properly as a Vaishnava when you're feeling satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Until you are, you cannot properly function as a Vaishnava. What is the business of a Vaishnava in this world? You can say to worship Krishna, but why stay in this world? If your only business is to worship Krishna, why don't you go to Vaikuntha? You can do it better there. What kind of worship you want to do? You want to cook for Krishna? Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrama Sevyamanam. Lord Govinda is served by hundreds and thousands of transcendental Lakshmis or gopis. They know how to cook a lot better than you do. Krishna needs a few chapatis from you? You know, why not? If you want to cook for Krishna, go join the real cooks in the spiritual world. You want to do the arti, do the worship. Okay, but that's much better facility for that in Vaikuntha. Why be in this world? What excuse do we have? What is the appropriate thing that a Vaishnava can do in this world? I can only think of two. Kill demons and preach. There's no demon killing going on now under the auspices of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is not his leela to be shedding blood. And if you want that, you wait for Kalki avatar. Otherwise, all we're left with is preaching. The activity of distributing Krishna consciousness, of showing compassion in that way, to these suffering souls in this world. That is service you can do here that can't be done in the spiritual world because there's nobody suffering in the spiritual world to save. Here you can serve Krishna by preaching. It's an excuse. And the only excuse I can think of, as long as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is around, only excuse I can think of for remaining in this world. If you want to preach, if you want to feel any compassion for the suffering souls, first prerequisite and most important, you have to feel satisfied in Krishna consciousness. If you don't feel satisfied with yourself, you're not going to feel kindly disposed toward anybody. You're going to be too angry and frustrated to be kind, to show compassion to anybody. And therefore, you won't be able to do the one thing that's worth doing for Krishna in this world that can't be done better in the spiritual world. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in his Namahatta song, Jibe Doya Krishnanam Sarva Dharma Sar. The whole essence of religion, at least for now in Kali Yuga, is simply mercy, compassion for the suffering souls and taking shelter of Krishna's names. That's everything. Everything else, no guarantee that it'll have any effect. But this is sure. If you can feel compassion for the conditioned souls and you can share with them Krishna's name. So we have to be fit two things we need to fit the bill, to be of any use for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We have to feel satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And we have to have a taste for chanting. That's what we have to work on. Everything else is secondary. You may not be good at other things. You may not know how to cook chapatis and make those brown spots come on them. You may not know that. You may not know how to put the tilak on straight. After 32 years, I still can't do it right. You know, but still, the thing that matters, two things that matters, is to feel satisfied so you can be at ease to feel any compassion for anybody else. And to have a strong attraction to chanting Krishna's names. That's everything. Then you can qualify as Atma Rati, Atma Triptas, chanting Hare Krishna and enjoying life on the inside. No matter what, hell is breaking loose on the outside. It doesn't matter then. Prabhupada says this is a person who is fully Krishna conscious. It's not the one who can make a big show of devotion, you know, chant 7-8 lakhs of rounds every day and walk through walls and do all sorts of magic tricks. That's not the sign of someone who's fully Krishna conscious. The sign is that he feels satisfied and therefore he feels compassion. He wants to help others. He doesn't consider others his enemies. He's tolerant and caring. And he's very attracted to Krishna, especially in the form of his holy names. And whatever, all impurity within is instantly cleansed by on the strength of being simply Krishna conscious. No matter what we've done in the past, no matter what disqualification we've had and what nonsense we've done and what heaps of sinful reactions we've acquired, it's all absolved. Debt is wiped out simply by these two qualities of enjoying Krishna consciousness and being attracted to Krishna. Evam prasanna manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha Bhagavad Tattva Vigyanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. Someone, prasanna manas, his mind is satisfied. The word persona is an interesting word. You can trace out the development of its meaning. Because literally, most literally, it's a quality of water, prasad. Clarity is the first meaning of the word prasad. When water is clear, that means nobody's shaken it up. There's no fish kicking it around. Nobody's thrown any rocks in it. It hasn't been raining. So it's not muddy. It's clear. You can see right through it, down to the bottom. That's prasad. Like the mind that is not agitated is calm and clear. By extension, although it originally is talking about water, when you apply it by extension to the mind, you get the further idea of being satisfied. So prasad then means satisfaction. And when you're satisfied, as I've been discussing, you're prone to be kind to other people. So the third meaning of prasad is mercy. And then the form of mercy that we're especially interested in is the remnants of Krishna's meals, the food offered to Krishna. That's his mercy. So prasad ends up meaning what we eat for breakfast and lunch. So the word goes through a whole series of evolutions and has all these meanings. Originally meaning the clarity of peaceful water. Prasanna manasa, your mind is peaceful and satisfied. By virtue of practicing Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, constantly serving the book Bhagavatam and the devotees Bhagavatam. Or Nitya also means daily. Nitya Kriya is the things you're supposed to do every day. We hear the Bhagavatam every day and we should serve devotees every day. Not just on special days. You know, not only just when you see your guru, then you put on, the guru comes to town, we put on a big show of loving each other. But we don't give a damn about each other the minute he steps out the door. No. It's nityam. Constant. Regular. Service. To the devotees. And to the book Bhagavatam. Thus, by that, the mind becomes satisfied and peaceful. What happens then? Bhagavad Bhakti Yogata. Then you are properly engaged in Krishna's devotional service. Then the obstacles are removed. And you're fully engaged, fully Krishna conscious. What happens then? Mukta Sangha. You're free of all material bondage, desires, acquired sinful reactions. You're relieved of all of those. Free. You're free. Mukta. Let out of the prison of Maya. You can go anywhere you want. If you choose, you can stay at Krishna's lotus feet. Otherwise, you want to drift off into the sky and become some Gandharva or join the Brahma Jyoti. You can do that if you want. You're free. Hopefully, you'll choose to remain at Krishna's lotus feet. Mukta Sangha Sijayate Bhagavad Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogata Bhagavad Tattva Vigyanam. You develop real understanding of what Krishna is. If you know Krishna, you'll become attracted to him. He's not the kind of person you can know and remain indifferent to. Now, as soon as you become acquainted with Krishna, you cannot help but become fascinated by him. He's like that. Otherwise, you don't know him. You may think you know him, but you don't know him if you're not fascinated with him. And if you know him and you become attracted to him, then you will develop love for him. So don't think this is dry knowledge that has nothing to do with emotions. This knowledge leads to the highest emotions, prema bhakti. This is a special kind of knowledge that is ecstatic knowledge, not static or dry knowledge. Mukta Sangha Sujayate. Then you develop pure nishta, firm conviction, and then attraction, ecstasy, and pure love. So that's what Krishna is talking about here. He's not talking about the impersonal pleasure of Brahmananda. He's talking about devotional pleasure. And therefore, Prabhupada is perfectly justified to interpret the verse in terms of Krishna consciousness, even though the words aren't there in the Sanskrit. It's just talking about being satisfied in the self. But impersonalists cannot actually be satisfied in the self. Yenye aravindaksha vimuktamaninas toyasta bhavada vishuddha buddhayaha akruhya kritchena param param tata patanti adho nadvita yushmadangrayaha. Those who are not devotees, they're especially impersonalists. They may imagine that they're liberated. Because when you take your Ekadanda sannyasi, you become a Mayavadi sannyasi, you're supposed to be automatically liberated. They give you officially Paramahamsa sannyas, you're free, you're Narayan already. Just by the strength of your initiation. Namo Narayanaya. And you can imagine, you can presume that you're liberated. And maybe if you follow strict sadhana, which very few Mayavadi sannyasis actually do, go to Rishikesh and ask the mahants of all those ashrams, how many of the sannyasis who come to their places actually practice any kind of serious sadhana? And they'll tell you, honestly, very few. You know, they put on the dress, they wander about, they beg, they take, but sadhana they don't know very much, actually. But if they do follow very strict sadhana the way Shankaracharya taught, then maybe they can get entrance into the Brahmajyoti. But they can't stay there. Avishuddha buddhayaha, because their intelligence has not properly been purified. They've changed their behavior externally, but their hearts are not clean on the inside. Not thoroughly. Shuddha, but not vishuddha. Not clean enough. It's like your parents say, okay, let me see how you washed your hands. And they look, hey, look, there's still dirt under the fingernails. Go back and wash them again. Vishuddha, but not vishuddha. Not clean enough. Not clean enough to stay in the Brahmajyoti. Trayasta bhavad. They haven't even tried. They are not at all interested in developing any love for you. And these are the demigods talking to Krishna in the womb of Devaki. Therefore, fall down again, even from the Brahmajyoti, from the spiritual sky. They come down again to the material world, even if they apparently got liberated. Because they have no right foundation for their liberation. They just imagine they're liberated, or they temporarily get some position, but they can't keep it. That is not Atmarati. Yes.
Based on his individuality, like it may be different.
Yes. Different. Yes, it's individual. It doesn't mean that he just decides for himself, just him and his mind and nobody else involved. It involves guru, and there's guru on the inside and guru on the outside, super soul and the spiritual master, Chaitya guru and the external guru. They give guidance. It's individual, but it's still under guidance, with consultation and guidance from authorities. Just like Ayurvedic medicine is individualized. The doctor looks at the individual patient and decides on the specific treatment for him. The patient shouldn't decide for himself. It's too complicated for him to decide. But still, it's individualized. Individualized, but not whimsical. not decided by yourself, but decided with the guidance of proper spiritual authorities. Is that okay? Hare Krishna. Okay. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
It's a responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility to find a guru. And it's your responsibility to make the choice. You should not just let others decide for you. Or just let, you know, the whims of fate decide. You know, whatever blows in the window, I'll take that. No. You know, if somebody walks into town, sings nicely, okay, that must be guru. You know, you have to use your intelligence and actually think about, you know, what you need. Anyway, one can hear from and try doing some service for any number of devotees. And then from those devotees, one criteria that limits it, it's strongly recommended the guru should be a Vaishnava. Don't take a non-Vaishnava guru. You know, that's what our Shastras tell us. Okay, so, but among the Vaishnavas, it can be anyone. It's a matter of personal chemistry and personal taste. So you just try out all the Vaishnavas. You listen and you try to do some service. That's on the basis. Hearing and service are the basis on which spiritual relationship develops. And then there should be a relationship first founded on the shiksha, or giving and receiving of instructions. And of course, instructions make sense when they're carried out. You know, I give you, you ask me, what can I do? What should I do? And I say, like the patient comes to the doctor, what should I do? I say, well, you take this medicine and don't eat these foods. And the patient comes back next week, did you take the medicine? No. Nope. Did you follow my instructions? Did you eat the thing? No, I ate everything else. Then what can the doctor do? He can't give further instructions. So like that, instructions are useful when they're carried out. So two things, hear and actually do some service, carry out instructions. You can practice that with any Vaishnavas. And then you see, that devotee is very nice, maybe very elevated, but I just don't feel like I can get the instruction, the guidance I need. I don't feel inspired, so I try another one. Until you just...
How long can you trust your own self to, come to a conclusion?
That you should never consult with anybody,
okay.
But you can consult. You can consult with the community of devotees. If they recommend, we're all disciples of so-and-so, you should take him too. You should consider that, but don't just let others decide for you. Yeah. And you should take some adequate time to shop around and decide, but not too long. Prabhupada said if you wait 7 years without taking initiation, then you're a Shudra. 7 years should be the practical limit.
But actually, when I was reading Prabhupada's book...
I know, Prabhupada didn't take initiation. I know, but he's exceptional.
I'm not trying to...
But normally 7 years is... More than 7 years is too much. A few years, maybe. Or less, but, And then when you choose someone, still there should be a period of mutual testing, of mutual examination. The guru's also looking at the disciple. Do I really want to take the risk with this person? And the disciple's also thinking like that.
And the disciple can think like that?
Should, for one year.
Okay.
And then when you actually make a commitment, I'm asking for initiation officially. At least up to the, you may change your mind up to the point of the actual initiation. Just like a marriage ceremony. You can decide not to get married until the vows are taken.
Yes.
Yeah. But once you actually take the initiation, then there's no judgment. Then the disciple should not judge the guru. But when you're testing, it's a kind of judgment.
So when this testing period is going on, wouldn't it be Vaishnava Aparad to, doubt the person whom you want to accept as a guru? You're trying to test him.
It's not Aparad.
It's not Aparad.
Because it's a period of testing.
Testing.
Yeah. It's Aparad to be disrespectful. But if you say, I'm sorry, we've been looking at each other and I decided maybe better I take initiation for somebody else.
Wouldn't be right to say that.
You should say it nicely, respectfully.
Yes, that's there.
Yes, that's there.
I mean, like, it's not wrong to say that.
No, if you say it's wrong to say it the wrong way, to say it disrespectfully.
Yes.
And we have cases like that in Islam.
We are talking about this.
We have cases like that.
Yes. It's a different topic.